crowd out now. We had a 15-minute break half an hour ago, so we're going to restart.
Remote participants hear us?
Okay, I'd like to get started, if we may. We're just waiting for a few people to reappear from the coffee break, but let's crack on. What I want to do is... Bill has very kindly been volunteered to take us through the consumer research slides. Then I'd like to have a discussion amongst the group before lunchtime about what this tells us, what impact it has on our report, and do we need to think more carefully, I would suggest, about who the consumers of who is really are as a result.
Okay. I need one of those things that Susan has. So, yeah, Susan. Okay. So let's see. We contracted with User Insight. They went out in 10 different countries, Asia Pacific, Americas, Europe, Africa, basically from the 1st to the 15th of October. And they held some interviews in Atlanta, Georgia, in preparation for that. Next slide. So they were in, as stated, in about 10 countries, roughly 100 users from each, except for the United States, it looks like, where we had 300 users surveyed. But otherwise, pretty uniform numbers and uniform distribution. Next slide. It's okay. So roughly 1,200 users, evenly split male-female. Slightly higher in the younger age category, 470 users in 18 to 29 years old. And then decreasing pretty linearly, it looks like, in age groups. Yep, it is linear. There's a mix of employment across industries, and then I think, as we had asked, a significant proportion, over 900 out of the 1,200, are not domain name owners. Next. That's okay. Okay, this talks about website trust. Majority of users is enhanced when they find safe, secure images, such as VeriSign and Trustee. When going to e-commerce sites, it's about 60, about two-thirds. Similar number have trust in sites for companies that they know. Users in France took the HTTPS lock as a sign of trust, about half of them. I don't know what that looks like in other jurisdictions, but I'm guessing that that may be more in higher. That's the reason they might have called it out in the executive summary. When they're looking for a fraudulent site, majority users are going to find the contact information on the site itself, two-thirds of them, and then roughly similar amount, though slightly less, would go and do some reputation-based analysis from user reviews. When they were asked to locate the domain for a large brand holder, the Coca-Cola company, most felt that it was easy, almost three-quarters, and that they correctly identified the owner, two-thirds of them. Most of the users felt had high confidence in the information and in the trustworthiness of that information. Again, three-quarters and then close to 90%. Next. overall awareness of who is low, right at about a quarter when asked to find a website domain owner. Most users did not think to utilize Whois. I'm assuming that means that the seven to the three quarters there means three quarters didn't think to use it, since that matches to the roughly one quarter. Most of the users did not own a website, 80%. Of those that did, the majority used it for personal use, 60%, though I would say that's a slight majority only. Only half of those who registered were aware of Whois lookup, that Whois existed prior to the survey. I'm not sure what the next one, I'll just read it. The majority of international users, I'm assuming that's non-US, collect personal information or have financial transaction services through their website, 54%. However, most national users with a website domain do not. I think that's talking about the domain name owners. I don't know what that means either with respect to Whois, other than they're collecting, some are collecting PII and others are not. Yeah, okay, next. I was trying to figure that out. Okay, now website trustability, what's most important? 60% of the of international users and three quarters of national users rank safe and secure images as most important. I'm guessing that was trustee and the other things.
Bottom it says, please rate the importance of the following elements when determining if a website is trustworthy. So the top one is what most people rated first. I'm guessing,
but for me, the top four look about the same, right? They're all they're slight variation. One thing I don't see in here is anything like standard deviation or anything like that to help us interpret these numbers. It seems that people trust companies they already know. 55%. Internationally and 70 of national, ranking that element a 1 or 2. Okay, next. So the question, if you were concerned that a website was fraudulent or questionable, which of the following would you do first? Find website contact info. So the first one that they would do is search for a directory of website owners. It's the claim, but again, all of these seem to be about the same except for other. They're all, from my perspective, anyway, it's a relatively uniform distribution.
I'm not sure, actually, whether it means something that we could... We'll discuss afterwards what questions we have for user insight on clarification, because I've got a few.
Next. Most agree to the ease of finding the website owner. I was able to easily find the information on the website of the Coca-Cola Company.com. Most of the people agreed, 75% agreed somewhat, or no, actually. Strongly agreed, 25%, 38%. So again, it's split about half. A little bit more in terms of agreeing that it was easy to find. If I could throw in a comment on my own, the Coca-Cola Company was an interesting choice, I think. It had obviously correct information, and you know, it's a large brand, well recognized. So I don't recall and didn't think that they did any other sites, but
we had we were asked to direct them on the sites. I'm not sure whether we actually managed to agree anything.
Yeah, I think
it was
quite a discussion.
So
okay. So next slide.
sorry to do that. I was late and lost. Internationally in the U.S.?
No, my guess is, actually, I don't know.
I think it does mean U.S., and I think that all of the other countries are lumped together as international, which...
So national means U.S. or no?
If we release this slide, can you relabel that?
We would have to. I trust this, so this is in response to, I trust the information I found on the Coca-Cola company, and the vast majority of people trusted it, either somewhat or strongly. Next. Next again. There we go. Based on the task you understood, blah, 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 who did register the web? Okay. So then they're asking CSC corporate domains, Coca-Cola company. Most people are saying Coca-Cola companies registered the domain. So 70% roughly correctly identified the Coca-Cola company. Could not find the information. Percent could not find. A small percent, I think.
Yeah. Alice?
We have James in the Adobe room who's raising his hand. So, James, are you able to speak, or is it too painful? Okay, he's writing his question. Are we using website owner and registrant interchangeably?
I probably am. I don't know about that in the study.
Yeah. James, we're compiling a list of questions to put to user insight, so that might well be one of them. Thank you.
Okay. Next. This one's asking, did you use Whois? 75% of the international users said yes, 79% of the national indicated not using. That one's interesting.
From the website.
On who the owner of the domain is.
It was on the probably on the website, like contact us.
But it looks like the question was not who is the owner of the domain, but who is the owner of the website. That's... Wait, can we finish? Can we go back one slide?
Just to say that we have an additional comment from James who's saying, because domain registrant and website owner are not necessarily the same. Example, blogger.com.
I think that that's a point well made about being precisely precise on our terminology. However, this is a consumer study, and so there's a balance to be achieved between using the exactly correct technical terms, which are, let's remind ourselves, nearly identical to each other to describe the key players in this supply chain, or using terms which consumers are judged to understand. And I think that we were guided by the user insight people on that.
Yeah, I would, in the case of the Coca-Cola company, my guess is that they are one and the same. So, and I think that's everything that was the basis for all the results here, it appears. Next. Again. Most of the users in both camps were unaware of Whois. We saw that in the executive summary. Only around 20% have any idea what Whois is. Next. Okay, so this is talking, I believe the recommendation here is that whois.com is the most visible web presence, being the first Google result. So that's where people might go if they're aware of whois. I think that's what that is saying. Consider endorsement like VeriSign, trustee of websites that conform to ICANN policy. Can't help but throwing a comment in there here. That's a very weak thing to do. consider conducting future research to better understand why some users don't trust the information, the impact of incomplete records on trust, the impact of single versus double byte characters for some international users. That really should, it's not enough to be single versus double byte, but that's too technical. Next. Can we go back? So single byte would be, actually most everything on the internet is in fact in 7-bit ASCII. That's contained within a single byte. You can also have 8-bit ASCII.
For IDN?
No. That would be, the eight, those might be used in the URLs for IDNs, but actually there are many encodings for characters that range from 1 to on up to 4 and beyond bytes. So Unicode actually has all of the above, I believe, 1, 2, 3, and 4.
So do you understand that? Sorry, do we understand that last bullet point as meaning ASCII versus IDN?
My guess is I would take this to mean basically that we should better understand the impact of English, let's put it that way, okay, versus native language. That's how I would describe it, right? That if information is not provided to the user of this service in a language they can understand and a script that they can read, they aren't going to do it very. They aren't going to understand it. They may not trust it.
Okay, let's whip through the slides and then, or is that on that point?
Okay. Next. This is the appendix. I have not looked at these.
Okay. I had a quick look. There's actually some quite interesting demographics about the sort of most people consider themselves, they use the internet. Quite a few of them are, there's a nice spread of demographics and, you know, it's kind of, it's going to support this idea that this is a fairly representative sample, I think. But we can just take a look at them if that's okay, yeah. Or just take a look at them.
Sure, go ahead. Let's do the next one. Here they're using the internet 20 hours a week. Okay. Their experience using the internet, so we have, you know, the vast majority use it, are somewhat experienced or extremely experienced. Next, which I think actually is a pretty good thing for much of what we did. Okay, this one is an eye chart. They check email, they surf the web. Not too many of them maintain personal blogs. Very similar number use, what was that one? Location-based services.
They watch videos.
Yeah. Right, yeah, I mean, I think it's about what we would, or at least I would expect.
Yeah.
Yep, next. Most don't own and or maintain a personally registered domain or website. Okay, next. Then we get into whether they collect personally identifiable information or not. And again, to me, this looks evenly split, that yes, they do, or no, they don't. Next.
But it's also just, it's also financial transactions. So on my website, we do have financial transactions, but I certainly don't collect any personal data.
Can we go back?
Yeah.
What? Financial transactions. Okay. All right, next.
Lots of numbers
now on demographics by country. Next. Even more numbers. Okay, so next. Yeah, I've analyzed all of these, yes.
But look, interesting. Under line of work, none of the above is the vast majority. So that kind of those breakdowns didn't work for this particular group. I wonder what they're doing.
Okay, next. Maybe that's the end. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Bill. Thanks for being a sport on that. Okay. Thoughts, immediate reactions. How confident are we in this study? How confident are we to use it or to draw any conclusions from it? Face pulling is not an option. We have to translate into words. Wilfried Samad.
Well, just to get the discussion going, there is one big surprise for me in this result, and that's the homogeneity of the readings as compared to between North America and the other countries where the people were coming from that had to go through this exercise. I think this is an interesting piece of information which makes me quite comfortable actually to looking at the problem from a sort of from a uniform global perspective rather than from a perspective of what's usually called the digital divide or whatever those terms are. That's one of the things. And the other thing is that I appreciate the suggestions by User Insight regarding doing follow-up stuff, but I think we should just take the data that we got on the table, use that as fact, and stop there. I don't see a good reason or I don't see a motivation to dive into any one of their suggestions, like go on with more detailed stuff. I don't think it's going to help us in any way with our mandate.
Thank you very much. Samad?
So I think if I have to pick one piece of information from all this, the most important one for me would be that there is a very small number of people who are actually familiar with you, who is and use who is information. I think it was 24% or 22%. And that sort of directly feeds into the cross-community outreach and communication kind of work stuff which we're going to build into our report, that the information about who is just not there. And maybe more use can also promote more accuracy or availability, because one of the reasons it may not be accurate or available is because nobody's really using it.
And any other Lutz? Bill, have you got your hand up yet? And I can see James has said something. I can't actually read what James has said, but
following Samant's notice that almost nobody is aware of who is services, and using the recommendation here that it might be possible to provide or promotion for a centralized who is website where all the information can be accessed. Do I understand it correctly that the recommendation is to set up such a website for all who is service, where somebody can enter a question and get a final result regardless how the information are collected?
Sorry, just to clarify, Lutz, do you mean our recommendation or User Insights?
No, only if I take this report here, it's seen. Most of the people are not aware that the WHOIS data is available, and even if they are aware that there is something, they have problems getting the information. So one of the recommendations is to promote a WHOIS service, a service to access WHOIS data for normal people. Do I understand correctly that it's the recommendation of this report to provide such a service?
I didn't read it like that, actually, Lutz. So I think I read it. I'm not sure. Could be wrong. I read it as saying consider that the top search result is for whois.com, which I think is a commercial provider or something like that. Is that what you were saying? And that, yeah, and that there ought to be more communication.
If I take the recommendation saying we have to, it would be better to promote such a service. Doesn't necessarily need that we that the recommendation is to promote the service which is currently on top one at Google. It could be a website by icon saying if you have want some information, please go to this website, promote this website. If you need some information about who is domain owner, we have an icon website which is trustfully because we are the good guys. So we provide such a service, and all these providers currently providing whois access services are gone. Okay, fine, we have a common access to whois, regardless of the technical details behind. We have a common access which can be promoted, which can be put on the website of every registrar to say, if you need some information, please go here. We have a common interface which is multi-language, which provides the correct information, guides you to the correct information. It would be a recommendation, I understand from this report, to promote access to whois data for everybody.
So that would be your how we would make this situation better. Thank you very much for that. Bill?
Okay, so generally I think, echoing what other people have said, low awareness to me, and this isn't surprising. That consumer trust actually is, I think is, and again for me this isn't surprising, but is enhanced by the quality of a website, so the design of the website, the images, does it look professional? Branding, I'm more surprised with somewhat, but the e-trust, the other thing, BBB, 27,000 doctors recommend using whatever, that these relatively sophisticated users found that was useful. The other thing is that at least in the one site that we had them use, whois, it appears that a significant percentage, 3/4 of them, found that when the information, I would say, looks valid, they have trust in it. Okay? I actually would be interested to know what the results would have been had we given a site that had AAA or 123 Main Street, Dakar, Senegal, or something, Mickey Mouse as the registrant. So we don't have facts on that. I would speculate that we would come back probably even higher, where people say they don't trust that information if they see it. To Wilfried's point, the similar distribution worldwide on most everything, I think within some reasonable standard deviation, it doesn't look like we need specific or high, very different approaches in any different country or any area. The other thing which I actually was a little surprised about is that given the responses worldwide, and that they matched up with things out of North America, primarily English-speaking, it didn't look that like IDNs or internationalization was a significant issue yet. But I think part of that, if that's the case, part of it is because these people already use the Internet quite a bit, and still most of the content is primarily in English, so if they use it a lot, they have to be able to interpret what is being read. But from the report, and I think we all know it, as we grow from 2 billion on up, it's going to become a bigger and bigger issue. So I was somewhat surprised that we didn't see more disparity sort of in some of the results. I was surprised at that.
Should we go to James's comments, which are up on the screen? James, your first question or your first comment is, I think, something that's very, very relevant and something we need to do next. This really shows there are two groups, whois consumers, and we need to identify those consumers, and domain name registrants. They're not actually one and the same thing. encouraging that the awareness of the lock is about double that of who is. I think that is an important thing to note, that there, that consumer trust is something that's probably a mile wide, and various elements build up. You know, we were talking about the website design, the professionalism, blah blah blah. Who is might be one element of that, but other things are too. Yes, there are questions that were absent. I'm sure we're all experiencing the common feelings when looking at the results of surveys, that you wish you'd asked different questions. But we've got what we've got, I think. Kathy, you were next in line. Did you want to come?
I forgot one thing. And for me, one of the things that was, I know I've forgotten it again. From my perspective, given that, and I'm not surprised by this, but that knowledge of who is at roughly 20%, and a significant portion of that probably is from domain, those who own domains. Mm-hmm. Who is, I don't think will directly increase, no matter how hard we work at it, we will not enhance consumer trust through a campaign on who is. Right? Trying to educate the average consumer about who is, right, will be a significant effort unless there's like a button on every website that says, you know, with the contact us, that pulls information from who is. It's the only way. Otherwise, they have no reason to use it.
Okay, I've got a list emerging here. James, you've just clarified that I think maybe your point on the SSL lock is that consumers are taught to look for the lock on their browser rather than conduct whois lookups on the fly. Perhaps one, you know, your point's noted, Bill. It's in contrast to what Lutz is saying here. When we look at the success of the campaign to educate consumers about the significance of the padlock, we might ask ourselves whether how well a Whois similar campaign might do. But, you know, it needs to be sustained, but we have that button. Yeah. We have that button. So my list is Kathy, Sarmad, Susan, Wilfried. Anyone else want to plough in? Yeah, Seth and Lutz, yeah? Bit. I'll put you at the end to see how you feel. Okay.
I'd originally raised my hand to read the comments of James, so I'm so glad you did. James, keep typing. It's important. But, you know, looking at his questions closely and in the big character set, that the big font that we've been given by Alice, which I appreciate. You know, I had the same questions that I thought we were going to ask a few more questions of registrants. But the fact that so many people that they surveyed were able to find the data that they were looking for, that most of them didn't know about the Whois and didn't use the Whois, I thought was interesting. It makes me think that for the consumers of Whois that now we're catering towards a different group, law enforcement, brand protection. It's a more expert group that uses Whois, and that maybe that's the group we should be gearing our recommendations to at this time. Just a thought on that.
Yeah, thank you. Sarmad?
It would be actually nice to see the data segregated by country at some point.
Let's think of a list of questions that we would like clarification on from User Insighter.
Yeah.
That was one of mine as well.
And,
because I think there might be a developing country split,
right,
maybe,
and
that's just lost in the mush.
Split it on ASCII versus non-ASCII script.
Thank you, Susan.
This is Susan Kawaguchi. So on the slide, website trustability, most important elements, companies already know that they already know, comes in as second. The lock, the HTTPS SSL lock, comes in fifth. So, and this may not be fair to to Sharon and James, but I'd like to show you just a few quick home pages of sites that people rely on because of the Facebook name. And this is not a Facebook trademark issue. This is a user issue because they're using the Facebook trademarks. People look at these sites, think that they're very, very reliable, and then put information, private information in. So, you know, this is...
Okay, Susan, why don't... What about if you send the URLs to Alice, and then she can get them on the screen, and then the others can see them as well? But thank you for that. So we're looking at these on a consumer trust issue, given...
Right.
The results of what the survey is telling us, that people rely very much on the livery of the website.
Right. So a famous brand has two different... I mean, we have an infringement problem, which is our problem, and we deal with that. What we can't do without the help of accurate information is, A, take those sites down and protect our users. Let me see, Alice, if I can get this to you. So maybe you should go on, and I'll send you a bunch of...
Okay, thank you. Wilfried, I have next, then Seth and Lutz.
Yeah, I don't know whether this is helpful, but just an observation. I like the results of this study, in particular with regard to the sort of importance of padlocks and that sort of things. At the same time, I think it's almost irrelevant within our mandate, because we are not supposed to give any recommendation about security aspects of websites or that sort of things. I think it's interesting, but it's sort of irrelevant in that particular context. And just to round it out, another 20 seconds, with the padlock and the security, there is creative people who actually put a padlock as the icon into the URL. So, no, they wouldn't do that. Yeah, we do agree. Thank you.
Thank you. Seth, before we go to you, can I just relay what James is saying? That the theme of your thoughts, James, are that the survey commingles two groups that are importantly different, the people using Whois to find information and the people putting their personal information in Whois and trusting that it is handled responsibly. My comment on the second part of your... statement, James, is I don't think that we've really got under the skin of the second bit. I don't think that we were really asking in that survey how confident people are in the way that their own Whois data is handled, but I might well have missed that in the questions. So thank you for that comment, and keep them coming, please. Sharon, if you're still in the room, then if you could give us any thoughts you have, that would be very helpful. Seth?
I'm somewhat confused about the study. In a way, I think we learned a lot in constructing the study, because it made us think about things that we hadn't thought about. I'm a little distrustful regarding the results. I'm not sure why, but it's just surveys can have a lot of inaccuracies, and I think we have to be careful about how we use the data. But there's a point that, and I might be way off base, so I apologize. When Lynn was selecting the domain name, I had a discourse with her, and she selected this domain name, and I told her that the thick Whois is broken. And she didn't seem to get it. And I'm getting the same result today. And to me, that's important, because if you follow the way that we're supposed to find the thick Whois is, which is the authentic Whois is, you go to some site, that thin site, that tells you who the authentic thick Whois is. And what I'm getting, that site, it's whoisis.corporatedomains.com, and I can't get it to resolve either on an Apple or a PC. And I seem to be the only one who went through that process. And I either I'm doing something wrong, or none of us did it. And why didn't we do it? The thick domain name is whois.corporatedomains.com. So
what is
the Coca-Cola Company.com. Well, but I told Lynn this when she was designing it. I told her it's a broken link. It's not working. The link that is provided doesn't work. You can find the thick who has information in other places. And she didn't seem to understand what I was saying, and so I'm having that problem again today, and I'm
wondering. Let's look into this.
You are. You can get whois.corporatedomains.com to Internic and GoDaddy. Who is? I think it's a false webs. It's a false domain name. The whose is, but it's published in several thin.
What do you mean it's false?
It doesn't resolve.
Okay, why don't we take this offline?
Because
it might be a more interesting aspect of the survey than we know, if you can't actually get the results through Whois and they all think they got it.
But not through the authentic.
Yeah, James is agreeing with you that the survey, that I think that the process of going through the survey, and certainly I found the qualitative feedback extremely interesting and something that we should definitely be knitting in some way into our report. Okay, who else is on my list?
Do you have any observations, anything you wanted to say?
I just thinking about the results for us from the survey. We get information that most people which we are addressing in the area of consumer trust are not aware of Whois services at all. So we have two possibilities to deal with the result. First, we can encourage a promotion program, or we can consider Whois as irrelevant for consumer trust. But we have to decide as a group what's the result we want to take from the survey.
That probably takes us nicely into what I want to explore next. We've got the slides from Susan to just... Susan, did you want to just talk us through those web pages and the significance?
Yeah.
And highlight why it's relevant, why it ties into the survey.
So it's just because the trustability, companies already known, and this isn't any, news to people, but this actually starts out as superfacebooksurvey.info and then redirects to this paying social surveys. Most people would look at this and go, yeah, that's Facebook. And then they'd go through and go, oh, Facebook's giving something away. We have a big problem with this. We're not the only company that has. And so it's just to show you that people are relying on what's on there. So now if I turn around, in this case, paying social surveys is a proxy registration, so... and we're suing this company, so we will someday get this taken down, not now. But if you go to the next one, just really quick, I don't want to, be that Facebook focused, but those are, this is the issues that people are seeing. And let's see what else comes up. So all Facebook stats, they this is actually semi-legitimate, but it looks like us. And it's not authorized by us. We're in discussions with them right now. But why would anybody have any thought that this is not Facebook? And then just maybe the third one. I won't go through all of them. And what is this one? Facebook page template. So each of these sites are either taking information or providing a service, and they're doing it under a brand's name. People, they're professional looking. They look, and so here we have a study that shows that the second element that people are going to look for is the companies they already know it for trustability. And I have to battle to get the information behind these websites. And to contact people. So that, it's just a real quick, but we can't ignore the trustability portion of this.
Thank you very much, Susan. And I think we all take those slides as you know, not Facebook orientated, but just demonstrating the consumer protection angle of brand protection and lookalike sites. So I've got Bill and then Wilfried. Mm-hmm. Guys, can we just keep the side conversations to a minimum? Don't understand how this is relevant. Websites are spoofed, fished, we know this.
I believe it does as well, especially given what we did learn from the survey, which is at least in France, right? And at least in France, 50% of the people believe in the green lock. Okay? So as James had suggested, right, there is a button. It's the green lock. If we could convince the browser vendors to implement Whois lookups, if you clicked the lock and it would present information about who actually owned this thing, that might, in fact, be a useful thing. Because, well, there are other issues around SSL, certificate authorities, and Whois may in fact provide a partial, not a solution, but it might provide another mechanism for consumers to figure out what's actually going on.
Okay, my list is now Wilfried Lutz, Kathy.
Yeah, I wanted to follow up on Susan's aspect of the whole thing, and also on Lutz's question, like, should we sort of try to advise the community to do something in favor of Whois or just point out that it's useless. And before Susan's contribution, I would have rolled the dice if I would have had to make a decision. Listening to this one, I could see some merit in actually including a paragraph or some stuff which is not really a hard recommendation towards the board or towards ICANN, but more like a message to the community. We have found as a sideline result of this exercise that Whois is much less prominent in finding out the legitimacy of something that is displayed on the web. Is this something the community wants to take up and to either promote Whois in favor of fake padlocks or of your backyard designed trustfulness graphics, or I mean, I just know it's just for discussion.
Thank you. Lutz and then Kathy.
I'm shocked. I just understand where the problem with Whois servers is. What's the problem with Whois services? What's the problem Bill has? What's the problem is Zed has? I just understand what the problem is, what the people conducting the service had with Whois servers. They just put in the Whois server into the browser address line. That's a completely different protocol. A lot of people think if they have a name.name.name thing, it's something to put in the browser line. But Whois servers are accessed using the Whois protocol, not using the HTTP protocol. And of course, if you are using the wrong protocol, you do not get an answer. You do not even get a result from, because the servers do not respond as a web server. They are not web servers, they are Whois servers. I'm shocked.
Well, I'm shocked that you're shocked, to be honest. Okay.
So, and to make it just to overcome this, I'm shocked. We can make a recommendation. We can make a recommendation. If somebody provides Whois server, providing the Whois protocol, we as the Whois review team recommend them to provide a web server answering the same question using browser protocol HTTP. So we have a more acceptable way to ask answer these questions. I'm really shocked that almost all people using only the browser to access an internet resource. I was not aware of it, sorry.
So we've all learned something, I think. Kathy, Sarmad, Bill? and then let's decide what we're going to do next. First of all, can I just draw attention to Sharon's comments, which is chairing the online UK crime prevention campaign, most normal people, glad that you know some, Sharon, have absolutely no idea at all about who is. James is agreeing with that, and that the padlock is much better understood. Let's continue with the list. Kathy, Salmad, Bill, let's focus our comments on what we draw out of this consumer study. So a comment that I heard earlier from Kathy and from others is maybe the consumers of Whois are different to the people we thought. Uh-huh. So we need to identify those in order to make proper recommendations. So Kathy, Salmad, Bill, please.
Thanks. I just wanted to reiterate a point that James made earlier, that we tried to kind of get into the survey, but it seemed to be too detailed to be picked up by, you know, our survey experts, which I appreciate. But the web page, the website or web page owner may not be the domain name owner, particularly in situations like blogs or in the non-commercial community where content may be created by an array of people. And web pages may be created, and organizations may have sub-organizations that are working on it. Content is not, domain names and web page owners are not always the same thing. But back to this point of who, and looking at Sharon's comment as well, one of the things the survey showed me is that normal people are not using the Whois, and that seems to be both international and whatever national means, U.S., if that's what it means. And so I'm really keen on focusing on the group that have come to us as the consumers of the Whois data. And let me just share kind of who I've heard over time. Certainly law enforcement, certainly brand owners and large companies. Another one, frankly, is people who buy and sell domain names, who are looking for availability. You know, when does the domain name drop? When's it available next? And although they're not consumers because it's a business use, of course, registries and registrars who use the data. But the first three are really the group that I was thinking of, the experts. And I'd love to be working on making the available more accessible and more accurate for the uses that we know about that are so frustrating for the people who are trying so hard to use the Whois now.
Yeah. Thank you much for that, Kathy. I think that's a very positive direction for us to move in as we're thinking about our recommendations. Perhaps we cannot also lose sight of the fact that consumers do like to know who they're dealing with. But they don't seem to be using Whois to answer that question. Salmad, Bill, Susan?
So just to respond to this comment about accessing data through web. There seems to be I just opened the RAA agreement, and section 3.3.1 actually says that registrar shall provide an interactive web page and a port 43 Whois service providing free public query-based access to up-to-date information and so on. I probably don't understand why your concern was about. Are you saying that it's not supposed to be provided, or it's only provided on port 43, or because the agreement actually says that it's supposed to be also provided through web-based services? I'm not sure I understand what you are trying to say.
The problem that was running into was a delegation to a Whois server from the COM registry to the registrar Whois, and the registrar Whois is only available on the port 43, not available on port 80 or 443. So he has problems with copying the reference into the browser line. Just misunderstanding of the technical protocol, how Whois servers are working.
So,
Salmad, did you have any other comments while you have the mic? No, thank you for that. I've got Bill next, then Susan. Wilfried, did I see you waiting?
So let's if in fact they are not providing one on port 80, they are in violation of the RAA, because the RAA, as Sarma just points out, they must provide both a web access, which is by default port 80, and port 43. So they are in violation of the RAA. Seth should have been able to get there. I should have been able to get there. There is no reason in my mind that we should ever expect the average user to know how to use Telnet.
I did not check if the register is an accredited register or another one. I didn't check it, sorry.
Susan?
This point, sorry. Good thing you're there. I don't think we should limit our audience and or who the users of the who is, because I think we want to come out with the same result. We want an available, accurate who is record. So if we limit our audience just to domainers and brands, and I can't remember the third, law enforcement, registrants, then I think I don't understand what would be different in the results that we would expect, because what we want is the available, accurate, and reliable who is record. So if we divide that as a wide base for internet users, which would be my intent, or narrow it to only players in the game right now, then I think we'd still come out with the same thing, but I don't want to leave out those internet users.
Thank you, Susan. I'd like to join the queue, and then I've got Bill Olof as well. Olof, do you want to go first?
Well, actually, just channeling James, who commenting that they, meaning port 43 and port 80 access, are required to provide both, but not necessarily on the same server URL. So the interactive web page is probably located on the registrar home page.
Thank you. Bill, do you want to go and then I'll come in?
Sure. Responding to that quickly, expecting the average user to know the difference between port 43, port 80, web browsers, Telnet, is insanity. Sorry. To Susan's point, yes, exactly. That's perfectly rational. Yeah. Well, or a decade, you know. So.
No, that is so good.
Just lie down for a second.
Yeah. Did you have to say, Susan just asked was a decade, spending way too much time in who is.
So I understand you correctly that you're saying that we are not, for the usual customer, we do not need to provide who is service at all.
No, that's not what I'm saying. I'm saying that we need to be consistent, so that if you do a web-based search query and you are directed to a site that where you have to do a port 43 access using Telnet, as we have demonstrated today, right, relatively knowledgeable people won't be able to do it. I'm channeling the average user.
But it's not a problem of the protocol. It's not a problem of the protocol.
I am not saying it's a problem of the protocol.
Time out, guys. Time out
on
this.
It is.
Take it to the lunch break. So,
okay,
James agrees with you, Bill.
Yeah. So with Susan, I also don't want us to focus purely on law enforcement, domainers, or whoever, you know, us, people who have to use this stuff. That is an important audience, okay? And I think to James's, back to James's point, right, that is an audience, and putting these two together in the survey pointed out some issues, but I think we learned something as well. That's an important audience for us to address. I think now to Wilfried's point, we learned some things as a result of this consumer study. Okay, they may not, you know, may not be earth-shattering stuff, but as an example, consumers trust the SSL lock. Perhaps there is something we could suggest, right, tying who is data to that in such a way. So if you clicked on it, you actually would get who is information that would tell you who is behind this. And if it was presented in a way that it made sense to the average user, it would enhance consumer trust, which is one of the things we are asked to evaluate and provide recommendations on.
Okay, I'm next in the queue, so I'm going to go. Susan, to your point, I think that the benefit of identifying who the users of Whois are is because if we take this consumer survey at face value, we could say, well, just get rid of Whois and no one will notice. And I don't think you would support that, would you? So I think we note that consumers are not the perhaps the consumers, but there are consumers of Whois, if I can, who aren't consumers. They are people like you and people like Sharon and people who are in the industry. These are the people who are using Whois on a regular basis and trying to rely on it. Okay, you are users of Whois. So I think that even if we don't limit our recommendations, we need to acknowledge that there are expert user groups who are relying or trying to rely on this. Would you agree with that? Yeah. I think that to your point, Bill, the consumer study tells me something, which is that if Whois was more widely known, this is also your point, Lutz, and if it was more reliable in terms of accuracy, it might be a useful thing for enhancing consumer trust in the consumers, these guys in the survey. You can see that they like the padlock. They know it and they like it and they rely on it. If there are other clues in the ecosystem to help them trust, then this is something that might be worthy of exploration. So those are the two messages that I would take away. I do think that we need I agree with you, Kathy, and there's no surprise there because we were discussing this yesterday. So I think that we need a bit of a focus on who the users are, who is relying on it. Lutz. I've got Lutz and then you, and then lunch is ready, actually, and we'll update you on where we are.
So I'm coming to the conclusion that it would be a positive effect to have an ICANN-sponsored website where all Whois data is retrievable, because the technical details to find the right information, overcome captchas and some great limiting informations on various websites, must be removed for the usual customer that is not able to fulfill all the different needs, all the different outcomes, all the different outputs, the various different websites. It's too complicated. So if we want the customer to build trust on Whois information, we had to provide a common, easy-to-access web page that builds trust based on some padlock, might be an ICANN sign. So if I understand it correctly, it would be better to have an ICANN-sponsored website to make all the Whois queries on one place, hiding all the technical details for the customer.
Thank you very much, Lutz. Kathy, you're in the queue here.
I like Emily's suggestion of kind of the immediate focus on the current users of Whois and their frustrations and a longer-term focus on a more general audience. And I just wanted to point out there's another category of expert user, and he's in the room. And so I just wanted to introduce him. This is Rod Rasmussen, who's the co-founder of the Anti-Phishing Working Group. So if over the break, you know, over lunch break, you want to talk with him as well, you know, we can see kind of who's coming into the room to listen to what we're talking about. And, you know, we can use these experts and talk with them.
With that, let's have a break for lunch now. It's ready. And given that we have some guests in the room, you're very welcome to share the lunch with us.
Yes.
Oh, yeah, right. Let's reconvene at 1:30, prompt.
If we're not lost.
If we're not lost. We're going to fit Kathy with a GPS device.